Welcome to another episode of Booktown Blether. I'm Jane Baldwin and I'm a bookseller and publisher here in Wigtown and I have Foggy Tuttle Books. We are again in New Chapter Books, which is across the road from my shop and is owned by Lou, who you often hear on episodes of Booktown Blether. But this week we're doing a special podcast, another in a series of special podcasts. And I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Andy Stewart of the book, we'll edit this bit out, of Wigtown Book Festival Company. And Andy's been with the company for quite a few years, 5 years, I believe, but has also got some very exciting news to share with us, hopefully. And anyway, Andy, you're originally from Newton Stewart, yes?
No.
So,
originally from Durham, moved to Newton Stewart when I was maybe 12, 13.
All right.
Yeah. So, an adopted local at this
time. Yes. Oh, definitely. Aha. Yes. So, that obviously the family moved through to the, was that with work or because it's interesting to know how people end up here when, you know, when they're not from here.
Yeah,
like I ended up here because I was married to somebody who was involved in the forestry. So that's what we were in Dumfries before this and it brought us through to here. So it's always interesting to hear how people end up.
Yes, quite similar then. So my dad was in forestry.
Right.
And still is. So yeah, that's how we ended up in the region. And obviously I went to high school at the Douglas Hewitt as well.
Very good. So what did you do after the Douglas Hewitt?
So after the Douglas Hewitt, I went back to Durham. So I moved back to Durham when I was 16, studied at sixth form, which I guess is the English equivalent of kind of S6 and your first year of uni kind of combined together. And so I studied my A-levels and then ended up back here when I took the job at Wigtown.
Right. Gosh, so you'd started, I hadn't realised you'd started that young.
Yeah, so technically I'd already been involved with the festival for 5 years. So I came up through the programmes. At the time, it was WTF, but a kind of young producers program, which I guess is no more, but watch this space for how that might develop over the next.
So do you want to tell us a bit more about what a WTF was?
Yeah, of course.
Or is still?
Yeah, I suppose it is. So WTF was our young people's program that then became Wigtown and then became Wigtown YA.
But in its
early days, so I want to say 2012, the programme started. Mm-hmm. It was programmed by young people for young people, whereas now the for young people bit is still happening.
Right.
And we're really keen that we encourage more young people to come back in that kind of programming, producing, with an emphasis on sort of skills development. But back in its earlier days, you know, that was where it started.
Mm-hmm.
I would have joined that team in maybe it's 2014, 2015.
Right.
Funded by the Hollywood Trust, so you can imagine the style of programme that it is, if you know the Hollywood Trust at all.
Right.
But it was all about getting young people programming, working with publicists. And the young people that have been involved in that have gone on to, you know, really interesting careers, have studied in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some former team members are now working with Edinburgh Book Festival, with Bloomsbury, with Penguin. So
Excellent.
It really has started careers for a lot of young people in the region.
Yeah. That's great, isn't it? And that, yeah, what a great resource that has been for young people in the area to be able to be part of something like that.
Yeah, it's been really fantastic. And I mean, obviously, it's been the thing that's propelled me into this industry as well.
Yeah. So did when you joined the WTF, you must have had an interest in books, but was that at that point, was it a kind of a career you were thinking of or had you got other plans? Obviously with your dad being in forestry, had that kind of appealed at all?
No, so I always wanted to be an architect as a kid.
Oh, right.
And actually, even while I was at sixth form, that was all of my eggs had been in that one basket for several years at that stage. And then halfway through sixth form, it's 2 year kind of course of study, and at the end of my first year I went, why am I doing this? I'm terrible at art and I'm terrible at math, so this makes very little sense. And at which point decided I would go and do a business degree, was taking a gap year, which was when my job came up at Wigtown original form. It's been through several kind of variations over the last 5 years. It was a 9-month contract. I thought, well, I'll spend 9 months back in Wigtown and then go to India or do whatever the rest of the gap year would look like.
Yeah.
Applied for the job, got it based on my experience volunteering with the organization. And then there was a pandemic. And that's kind of really where things changed. I mean, I'd say the thing that was drawing me to the job scandalously was less the literature side of things and more the event side of things. And obviously, you work in the books industry, you know that there's a very specific language that we use, and there's terminology, and it's a very contacts, networks based industry. So that kind of grew as I was doing the events sort of things, and the two at some point crossed over, and I realized I actually really enjoyed the literature side of things as much as the event side. And I guess a lot of that would have happened during COVID while we were all working remotely and suddenly delivering digital events, which none of us signed up for as events producers.
No, that's right.
But that was really where my interest and love of the other side of the industry grew, was during that time.
Right. So what was the job that was advertised then?
So at that point in time, it was young people's assistant, young people's coordinator, something like that. And it was, very much working with the young people's team and what was in the early days of WTF team, and the, working through the pandemic changed how we worked with young people.
Yes.
And that was where all of the original changes really happened. And we went to a smaller team, and it was a digital team, and young people were already sitting in front of their computers all day, every day for school. And they were saying,
so that brought a completely new perspective to your job then, and the way you were able to deliver things.
It completely was. And like I said, none of us signed up for digital events when we decided to be events producers, you know. But the way that young people wanted to receive those events was very different as well. And when people say, what do young people want? The answer that I think we all go to is digital.
Yes.
But that wasn't what we were seeing.
So
year one of COVID, our young people's audiences were phenomenal. They were some of the best we've ever had, and really engaged young people.
And what kind of events were you delivering then?
They were very similar to what we were delivering in person. They were just happening over Zoom instead. It was that kind of author conversation event. Normally with in-person YA events, you wouldn't necessarily have a chairperson or a moderator.
No.
But we needed to bring that in for digital events. That allowed us to play with different event formats, which was quite interesting to see how the audience responded to that. And like I say, year one was really successful for us. And then year two, that just dropped off because everyone's eyes were turning square looking at their screens all day, and everyone was just a bit fed up of it. Which really told us, we need to get back into a room. We need these events to take place in kind of a physical space again. And our audience has picked up.
So this has been, it was a steep learning curve for everybody, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
Generally in the world. But what skills did you have to draw on? Or was it a very much a kind of, you were learning, but you were obviously able to bring something to being able to enable these events to continue to go ahead and adapt all the time?
It really was a steep learning curve. And I mean, I'd been in my job for less than 9 months when the pandemic hit. So I was already very much in the learning phase of my career and trying to work out how it all fitted together. And then everything changed. Yeah, I mean, it was just really, really fast learning. And, the pandemic hit in the March, April time. So and we were delivering events in the March, so they all had to be cancelled, and we were postponing things and moving things around. And, we all thought this was going to be a pandemic that hit for 6 weeks and we'd go on with our lives again. And that isn't what happened.
And of course, you initially had signed up for 9 months, which had, so the, your contract had obviously just been renewed, had it? Or
yes,
so, just as all of this kicked in as well?
Yeah, I think there were, well, there were several factors. My place at university, the uni, had changed the course during my gap year. And I
Yeah,
so I was reevaluating what I was going to do anyway, because how they'd reformatted the course wasn't something that I really wanted to go on and do. And yeah, at the same time, pandemic hit, Wigtown was reevaluating as well and saying, how do we move these events from a physical space to a digital space? And I guess having young people on your team is quite important
yes.
at that point in time. So yeah, I think it was an initial 9 month extension, and then here we are, 5 years down the line. Yeah,
5 years late.
5 years later.
So your job involves organising things for the main book festival, which is always held the last weekend of September to the first weekend of October. But you, there's also the Big Dog Festival, which the programme's just been announced for So you might want, can you tell us a bit about what Big Dog is? And I'm trying to think how long it's been going.
So this will be,
was this part of your, was it an initiative that already existed?
Already existed.
Right, I can't remember
COVID
how long.
Changed it. Well, we just ditched it for 2 years, essentially. And then it's been quite nice. It's almost felt like building a festival from scratch.
Yes.
But it already has some kind of traction, which is useful. So this will be our 8th year of delivering Big Dog, minus the 2 years that we took out. Big Dog's probably my favourite event of the year. I love Big Dog. It's just so much fun. And because it's such a small festival, you kind of, the entire team really bonds over the kind of, especially the week building up to it, where you're building a festival site around you. And all of the authors that come along always say, you know, it's such a lovely, warm atmosphere. We do lots of author dinners during the week. It's just really lovely. So yeah, like I said, Big Dog, 8th year this year, every year takes place in Dumfries. This year, partnership with Mowbray, which is Scotland's National Centre for Children's Literature and Storytelling, and is used as one of our venues. Also, Mid-Steeple Quarter, we use some of their units on the high street.
And this, is that new this year, the Mid-Steeple Quarter?
No, so Mid-Steeple came on board last year. And worked really well for us, actually, being in the town centre. It was, I was really shocked, actually, by how many people were coming into the units as we were starting to build the festival, saying, why are there orange dogs everywhere? How are you connected to this? What's going on? I think we're so used to working in a Wigtown context where it's been here for 25 years. If you live in Wigtown and don't know there's a festival here, that's actually quite impressive. You know, and it is everywhere when you're in Wigtown. It's a struggle to escape the festival when it's here. But in Dumfries, you know, much larger context and it's a much smaller festival. So there is the potential for it to get lost. Yeah, so that was quite an interesting thing for us, I think, just to see how many people didn't know about Big Dog, but also to help us build that audience and, you know, understanding of what was going on. And last year, we also changed how we were marketing with schools as well. The emphasis really switched onto accessibility and making the program, you know, really, really open for all families, children, young people. So we were putting out vouchers for free tickets into every school with a DG1 and DG2 postcode. And we saw our audience numbers jump because of that. So it is just a really feel-good festival. It's lovely.
So what are the highlights of, because the programme's just been announced, it's at the end of March.
It's at the end of March, so the 22nd through until the 24th of March. So it's just the one weekend. On the Friday, we have a school's gala day, which this year will be held in the Bridge for the first time. Which is one of the kind of learning campuses in Dumfries. Normally we would go out into the schools, but we wanted to trial this and see how it worked to bring them all together. So the day is being opened by Philip Reeve and Sarah McIntyre.
Excellent. I'm
super excited about. And then the afternoon will be led by Lauren Child, the former Washington's Children's Laureate.
What a great program.
It feels like big dog's finding its space,
yes,
I guess, at this point,
yes,
in terms of the publishing world anyway,
uh-huh,
and is starting to build that traction and get the recognition and, you know, bring in some of those kind of A-lister names,
yes,
if you like.
All right, yes. Yeah. Well, they definitely are.
Yeah.
Yes,
100%.
Yes.
So, yes, quite exciting. And then through into the weekend program, again, Philip and Sarah will be doing some stuff publicly for families, again with Lauren Child, her Artex coming back, who always draws a really good crowd for us.
Right.
Obviously, your own author, Susie Briggs,
yes,
will be joining us. Susie's, and she has her,
yes,
new book out.
That's right.
Which we're really excited to... She's launching it at Big Dog as well.
Yes.
Yeah, we're her first event.
That's right, yes. She will be reading it at Kukubri. But this is her first, proper event. It's the launch is at Big Dog, which I thought would be good. Yeah. Yes. And you've got Alan Windram coming,
Alan Windram is coming back
with the One Button Benny.
Favourite. Yeah, so
yes,
he's got the new One Button Benny book came out towards the end of last year.
I think Wigtown
was one of his first events with that book last year. And
It's such a popular series.
And lovely to have him back with us with something different as well.
Yes. Yes. And I suppose when you're programming something, it's having obviously the big names, but mm-hmm. it's also having people who present a good event.
That's exactly
And obviously Alan was with, I think, Sticky Kids years and years ago, mm-hmm. which was a bit like Singing Kettle. I'm dredging my memory because my children went to see Sticky Kids. Anyway, I hope I'm right. Apologies to Alan if I've got it wrong. But I know his early books were about songs and involving children through music and things. Mm. So a bit like with Susie as well. She's a highly experienced storyteller. So they're bringing something, you know, very quite different, but very entertaining for children and for families.
Yeah, you're so right in what you're saying there. And it's a conversation that we can kind of go round and round in circles about, because especially with Big Dog, when we're talking about access and it's about, you know, building a community of readers and, you know, families, children that read for pleasure rather than it being seen as a chore.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to go to David Walliams when I say this. Risky, okay?
Yes.
There's a lot of controversy around that. And my take is, as long as the kid is reading,
then
I'm happy.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, many people would say, oh, it's David Walliams. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I understand some of the controversy there 100%. But the kid's reading.
Yes.
That's what's going to allow them to become a reader. So is it better value for a family to bring their kids to an event where they might think, oh, I don't know about this book,
but yes,
you get such a high value event and a high value experience that inspires a child to pick up the book and it starts them on that journey. And that's not to say I think any of the books in the Big Dog program are bad, because I wouldn't
have programmed them
at all. But it's so important that that author can also deliver a high standard of event.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. David Walliams is a difficult one. I mean, I just slightly going off for a moment is I often get people coming in looking for David Walliams books and I don't stock them.
Mm-hmm.
I've probably got some in second hand. That's not because I have a particular aversion.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that there are so many other writers who don't have the same profile, who have and have been writing for years, that I use that as a means to say, no, I haven't got David Walliams, but I do have, you know, these people, you know, like Johnny Mears, who you know, and like Frank Cottrell Boyce, who, despite his extraordinary, you know, career in screenwriting and doesn't seem to be as well known for children's books, and his books are so funny.
Yeah.
You know, and I always go, and my aim always is to just to say, look, these are really good writers and you will love these books if you give them a try.
Yeah.
Whereas my big thing with David Walliams is that you know, they're very popular, obviously, in supermarkets, where they are being sold at a price I cannot get them for from the wholesaler as a small independent bookseller. So for me, it makes no sense to try and compete, you know, with, you know, my local Sainsbury's or Tesco's or whatever. So I think, no, that's fine. And yeah, if you know, if it gets children reading, that's super. But I hope it then can lead on to, you know, accessing other authors too. So it's not a negative. Hopefully it is a positive.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you're right. There are authors that just don't have that celebrity name, but you know, that's got nothing to do with the writing.
No,
at the end of the day, and if we can point children and families in that direction, then fantastic. Mm.
Yes, and the thing is, there are some celebrity writers who are actually really good and don't, like Ben Bailey Smith, who I'm trying to remember what he because he's an actor and a comedian as well. Oh, he was on Taskmaster. This is it. So if you're listening to this and you know who I mean, you'll be yet again shouting at your device or radio or whatever. It's not Doc Green, is it? Anyway, but, you know, so there are, and David Baddiel, obviously, you've got, who writes really funny children's books. And there's a whole host of them, but, you know, they have, I suppose, there isn't that profile that David Walliams had. But again, it is good. It's got children interested in reading who maybe wouldn't have picked up a book. And if it then can lead on to exploring books generally, then that's great. You know, and I always explain it when people come in and say, have you got David Walliams? I'll say no, but, and this is the reason why, you know, just come and have a look at these. If you don't like them and you want to David Walliams, that's fine. You know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You're completely right. And I guess at the end of the day, you know, authors don't just write for the fun of it. It's a career.
Yes.
Right. So if we can advance their career, if we can make sure they're getting the representation that they should have, then, you know, perfect.
Yes. So, yes, you'll be really, so you're just kind of really, I mean, obviously you've been planning this for some time, but you're now at the kind of crazy end of it, really, is it? Or building up to that.
My craziest part is, I'm past it. It's the programme deadline. It's the really, really stressful part of just making sure that all your ducks are in a row before you announce something.
Yes.
Having clarified. And I'm sure you will have had several 11 o'clock at night emails from me going, Jane, just FYI, this is going to happen in the morning. If it's an issue, let me know. Because there's always one or two things that will slip through the net. But that's kind of my busiest point. And then I get to hand over to my fabulous colleague, Laurie, who picks a lot of the production stuff up. So at the moment, we're having lots of creative conversations about what the venue will look like, whether or not we can fit a double-decker bus under some wires, which has been today's crazy thing to deal with. So yeah, there's like lots of random little parts to the job as well.
So the venues that you have in the Mid-Steeple Quarter, are they pop-up venues then? Or are they not places that have been... I wasn't sure what was happening. Yeah. You know, that's not a project I'm kind of aware of. So these are venues that you take over and create a venue in.
Yeah, which is quite special in itself. And it's nice as well that, unlike Wigtown, where we're in marquees, you know, the weather effect. you know, we're going into essentially a blank box with full straight walls, which is lovely as an events producer to have that. Mid-Steeple Quarter is an organisation running in Dumfries, you know, and buying up essentially the buildings around the Mid-Steeple and developing them as places to work, places to live, and are renovating that whole area of the high street. And actually, I was in Dumfries at the end of last week, and it was really nice to see some of that work progressing and to see where they're up to. But yeah, we take over two spaces on the high street, and they are just blank boxes when we go in, and we get to make them look pretty and theme them to, you know, whatever the festival happens to be focused on that year.
Right. And what is there a theme this year? Is it
So, okay, Thieving Children's events is tricky because when you have a program of 30 events, you split that down between 5 different age ranges.
Yes.
You don't have a lot left to play with.
No.
So I always go into events with the intention of having these really strong curated themes throughout the program. And then you have several pitching meetings with the different publishing houses. And there's some really standout books that you really want to include. Uh-huh. And you cannot get them to match up, however hard you try.
No.
So yeah, there isn't too much of a theme this year with Big Dog. I think a lot of the themes will grow organically as well. I mean, with Wigtown last year, there were several dinosaur events every day. I did not intend to have any dinosaur events in particular, but sometimes it just happens.
Yeah.
Not that dinosaurs is necessarily a theme, but
no.
You get my drift.
Yes. So is the Big Dog this year the last festival that you'll be delivering for?
Yes.
Are you doing some, have you started in some ways on the Autumn Festival as well?
So there's some really exciting names in for the Autumn, which I'd love to be able to share, but it's all embargoed at the moment.
Yes, of course.
So the Autumn Festival is already in the works and has been kind of for the last 5 or 6 months.
Right.
Since the last one.
Yes,
some of them came in even before then.
Which I think is interesting for people to know, because I think, you know, from outside a festival, you know, perspective, you just, you know, myself just even being in the town, is you don't realize that, you know, I suppose there'd be a lot of people who think that you start, I don't know, not even 6 months, a few months, but, you know, they don't realise that actually the preparation kind of overlaps years.
Yeah.
And because sometimes, you know, authors aren't available this year, but could be available the following year. So you've got a structure already starting to develop. And then you have a bit of downtime after the main festival. And then it's into, you're just back into, so it's not, although it only happens over a 10-day period, it's a year-round thing.
Completely, yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely a 12-month process, but realistically, it's probably a 24-month process for a lot of things. Something I've always felt we've done really well at Wigtown, and, you know, it was so devastating during COVID not to be able to have it, and I hope that we're starting to get back to that level, is our very sort of conceptual happening over there projects that are a little bit random, like wallpapering the town. You know, that takes a lot of planning and licensing and, you know, so many conversations have to be had. Yeah, so it isn't just an overnight. It suddenly happens. And especially in the UK, there's so many book festivals that it's really competitive to get the names you want to get. And if you don't get in there early, they're going to be somewhere else. I mean, you know, in the space of 2 weeks either side of Wigtown, you've got us, you've got Bath, you've got Cheltenham, you've got Henley, I think, have similar dates in the autumn. And, you know, they're all big festivals. So it is very, really very competitive, and we
and when I talked with Anne, which I think may come after this interview, but anyway, we were talking a lot about location, about Wigtown's location, which is another level of challenge for you as a festival and as a programmer, is just because, you know, the authors, you know, and the agents and publishers can put together a program, and, you know, and they can probably be at home most nights and just going to various festivals down in England. Whereas, you know, coming to Scotland, if they're based in England, is a whole different kettle of fish. And then also, even within, you know, it's easier to access Glasgow, Edinburgh.
Yeah.
But, you know, Wigtown isn't the easiest place to get to.
It definitely isn't.
Yeah, and which will factor into people's schedules.
Yeah, it forms a lot of the conversations that we have with publicists, and you really have to have a good relationship with a publicist to go, yep, fine, we'll send you people.
Yeah.
Because there is that extra logistic challenge, and especially the last 2 years with all of the train strikes that we've had during the festival, it's been a minefield.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it It can be tricky. And like I say, it is a much bigger project than what you might think it is, mm-hmm. just looking at it on the surface. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but also Wigtown, I'm biased, but I'm told by authors that Wigtown is a very special festival and that
it's a festival
that they look forward to coming to.
Uh-huh. I think there's a different atmosphere here. That there is. I've gathered that from various authors that, you know, come in the shop and everything. That the atmosphere here is, there's much more of a sense of community.
Yeah.
And being involved in the community and being part of it for the time that they're here, and they're more likely to be able to have nice conversations with, instead of being whisked off somewhere else, or that's the impression.
We want to build a community feel to our festival, and you know, a lot of festivals you go to are quite corporate. We try to be the polar opposite of that.
Yeah.
in the good ways.
Yeah.
You know, we still like to have some level of organization, but definitely, you know, the authors can come and it feels like a bit of a holiday to them as well as, you know, they do that hour on stage, they do the bit of prep beforehand, they do some big signings, but hopefully they get to enjoy, you know, what we have to offer as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So we come to this. So basically this Big Dog is the last festival you are delivering?
Yeah. Let's say that for now.
Right,
There's always room for conversation and negotiation, I think.
Right. But you have another opportunity.
I have another opportunity, which came at a very bizarre time because I wasn't looking to move jobs.
Uh-huh.
And I was at a place where I was really, really enjoying what I was doing and there was lots of exciting projects coming up.
Uh-huh.
And then a LinkedIn notification came through just before Christmas last year and things changed quite a lot. So I am moving out to Dubai 2 days after Big Dog.
Oh, which, my goodness.
For someone that does logistics, was not a sensible decision. But here we are to join the team at Emirates Literature Foundation and Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, which is quite a mouthful to say.
Yes.
As their new program manager. So I'll specifically be looking after children's families, education, creative learning. So a similar role to the one I have at Wigtown. Also working alongside kind of teaching professionals and that kind of writer development side of things as well, which I'm quite looking forward to.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of bonkers. Everyone keeps going, that's such exciting news. And I keep saying, what am I doing?
Oh,
And that's not fair because I am really excited to be making the move. And
it's a big jump.
It's a big jump. And, I mean, Wigtown to Dubai, they're kind of polar opposites, right? And so much warmer.
So
much warmer.
Yes.
But yeah, it's a very different game as well. So I was in Dubai maybe 2 weeks ago to see their festival. And it was just completely mind-blowing to see the way that they deliver events. And I'm fairly confident in saying that their budget will look slightly different to ours.
Like possibly,
It is probably a more commercial festival, is a bit more corporate. You know, lots of sponsorship happening, you know, Emirates Airlines being their headline sponsor.
Yeah,
it's a very different game.
Yes. But yes. Amazingly exciting.
Yeah, like I say, bonkers.
Yes. But that's, but how great, because, you know, probably, 5 years ago, well, you know, before you took on the role with Wigtown, you were probably still thinking of doing something different. But it's this pathway has now brought you to a place where you've gained such experience, but probably in a very supportive atmosphere and in a community that you are familiar with, which has enabled you now to kind of think, I can do this.
I can do that, yeah.
Yeah.
It's really special. And I guess it does really start with that youth team that the festival company was running 10 years ago. You know, like that is where it started. And, you know, had things not changed with the degree that I was meant to be studying, had I not decided that I no longer wanted to be an architect, that I wouldn't have ended up here. And, you know, when you look at that pathway, exactly as you say, it feels very meant to be.
Yes.
At a point in time where, I mean, who's going to say no to going to Dubai?
Well, that's right.
And I had to think about it, you know, because there's a lot to love about the organisation in Wigtown. Like I say, I do think it's at a pivotal moment in a really exciting way, and that there's new projects on the horizon that are going to be really exciting for the team that gets to deliver those.
Right. Ooh. Yeah. We'll have Anne back later in the year then, when she can talk about those things. That would be great. Oh, well, best of luck.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes, I'm just very excited for you. It's it's brilliant. And it's just, I think it's also inspirational for young people to know that those things can happen. Because my children grew up here.
Of course.
And, you know, and you might think, well, what am I going to do? What opportunities will I have? And what's one of the wonderful things about Wigtown being the Scottish National Book Town is that it has brought opportunities to a rural community that, you know, where the traditional industry had gone and is taking things in a different direction. And hearing your story hopefully will, you know, make somebody else think, wow.
Yeah, you're completely right. I mean, the fact that those opportunities are there for young people in a town with a population of 880 people.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's kind of bonkers.
Yes.
There are kids in cities crying out for opportunities like this.
That's right.
They're on
our
doorstep. And, you know, I guess the only words of advice you can give is, you know, get involved with those opportunities. The doors are open.
Yes.
You know, access them and take part and, you know. See where that kind of pathway goes.
That's amazing. Well, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And yeah, we'll just have to look out for the name and see where where we see you in the future.
Well, you never know.
Well, that's it. That's great. Thank you.
Thanks, Jane.